Rockery Rocks.
I am Rocky's dad.
I am
legally Patrick Boggs.
The idea is to disguise the things that I am bringing to you. Let's see if you can decide where it was published, when it was published, who wrote it. In every corner of this country, I believe he means the United States of America, this weekend, that would have been the first weekend in the month of June, George Floyd's words, which were the words of Eric Garner before him, are echoing from millions of voices in our streets and in our hearts. I can't breathe. And Friday should have been Breonna Taylor's 27th birthday, a day she didn't live to see. They are among the latest additions to a list, an endless list of lives stolen and potential wiped out unnecessarily. In discussing a jobs report that made clear some 20 million Americans remain unemployed, Donald Trump said he hoped George Floyd was looking down and seeing this as a great day for our country. He invoked the name of a man brutally killed in an act of needless violence and a large tide of injustice that has metastasized on the president's watch to celebrate a jobs report that included an unemployment rate of 35% among black youth. Systematic racism affects every aspect of our society. COVID-19 is ravaging our country with almost 110,000 people now dead. But it is killing black people at almost 2.5 times the rate of white people. These are more than just numbers. They are lives. They represent families worried about losing their homes and feeding their children. And they are a wake-up call to all of us. The truth of our nation is that too often the color of your skin can alone endanger your life, and for far too long systematic racism has oppressed communities of color in the United States. Black and brown communities must no longer be the only ones to bear the weight of pushing for change. No one can stay silent. No one can ignore injustice. It's long past time for our nation to deal with systematic racism, including its contributions to growing economic inequity. We must seize the moment of opportunity to address all the issues that have denied the promise of this nation to so many for so long. Let's use this moment of urgency to finally find a path forward. History teaches us that our darkest moments have produced some of our greatest progress. The 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments followed the Civil War. The greatest economy in the history of the world grew out of the Great Depression. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 and Voting Rights Act of 1965 came
in the tracks of Bull Connor's vicious attack dogs unleashed on those pushing for change. Let us make this, too, a moment of action to deliver long overdue concrete policies to reverse systematic racism and to propel us across this turbulent threshold into an era of true equality and opportunity. No, I did not read the whole thing. It was an editorial published on the 6th of June, 2020, in the Los Angeles Times, and written by candidate Joe Biden. If a candidate can be published in the editorial pages, then probably almost any newspaper's editorial pages would consider the writings of a sitting president. Has he submitted anything? This was published in a different newspaper, I think maybe the New York Times, written by Maggie Haberman. June 12, 2020. Melania Trump, the First Lady, remained in New York City during the first months of her husband's presidency because she was renegotiating their prenuptial agreement. In the book, The Art of Her Deal, the untold story of Melania Trump, Mary Jordan, a reporter for The Washington Post, writes that in the way she manages her image, Mrs. Trump is far more similar to President Trump than people have realized. But one of the most striking details that Ms. Jordan reveals is something that had been rumored for years, that Mrs. Trump used the president's victory in 2006 as an opportunity to solidify her financial standing for herself and for the couple's son, Baron. During that time, Mrs. Trump was able to amend her financial arrangement with Mr. Trump, what Melania referred to as taking care of Baron. Ms. Jordan wrote, she wanted proof in writing that when it came to financial opportunities and inheritance, Baron would be treated as more of an equal to Trump's oldest three children. The prenuptial agreement, which Ms. Jordan wrote, was not initially overly generous to Mr. Trump's third wife, was renegotiated after a brutal presidential campaign during which audio emerged of the future president with Billy Bush talking about grabbing. Everybody remembers what he wanted to grab. And there was a Wall Street Journal report during the campaign about the National Enquirer paying for and then quashing a claim from a former Playboy model, Karen McDougal, about having had an affair with Mr. Trump. Asked a little more than a week ago to comment about the book, Ms. Trump's chief of staff, Stephanie Grisham, said yet another book about Mrs. Trump with false information and sources. This book belongs in the fiction genre. According to the Washington Post's account of the book, Mrs. Trump has been one of the biggest supporters of her husband's political career, and she is described as one of his most important sounding boards and someone whom Mr. Trump often relies on. But she has also encouraged some of his darker behavior, like Mr. Trump's lie that President Barack Obama may have been born in Kenya. And she has also constructed an image of herself that is not always supported by fact. For instance, Ms. Jordan raises questions about Mrs. Trump's claims of being fluent in a number of languages. Photographers and others who have worked with her over the years, including native speakers of Italian, French, and German, told the writer that they never heard her use more than a few words of those languages. I call my little bits of commentary mockery rocks. I can do it from the studios of FM Har in Shizuoka, Japan, because I have a top 40 kind of radio show in Shizuoka, Japan. As I came into the radio station on the 15th of June, I was greeted by the news from my home country and from my hometown. Police in Atlanta offered a $10,000 reward and published photos of what appeared to be a masked white woman. And we're not talking about the kind of mask you need to not contaminate people with COVID-19. We're talking about a mask that hides your identity. Police sought the people who burned down a Wendy's fast food joint where a man was fatally shot by an officer because the man ran away. But you shouldn't get shot dead from just running away from the police. The fast food outlet was torched on Saturday during demonstrations that erupted over the killing of 27-year-old Rayshard Brooks. His death came against a backdrop of nationwide protests against any and all racial injustices and brutality by law enforcement. And when people are demonstrating against it, you would think it would get better, but suddenly worse. Some news from the sports world, I would say, that had nothing to do with anyone taking a life or burning a structure. NASCAR recently announced that it will no longer allow the Confederate flag to be displayed at future NASCAR events. The move comes as protests continue across the USA. For New Orleans Saints running back Alvin Kamara, NASCAR's Confederate flag ban made him a new supporter of the sport. Maybe that's good news. After the announcement, Kamara shared his support for NASCAR's decision, asking when he could attend a race, and even live tweeting Wednesday's NASCAR race at Martinsville Speedway in Virginia. Good news, bad news, lingering issues. Thank you so much for listening to this Rock of Mockery.